This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Good morning. You're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything Tom, Rich and I have been up to as we reel from shock at the normal hours that we are working post-Ramadan. 6 a.m, you say, for the start of a breakfast show. But we had a lot of people to keep us company and keep us awake this morning. Two real estate experts, no less. One, Simon Baker, the Managing Director of House & House Real Estate, came in with their Q1 numbers to bring us up to date of where the market is now. And we spoke to one of the newest brokerages in the country that are trying to do things a little bit differently. Scott McFarlane is the Managing Partner of Family Homes DXB, a brokerage that gives cash back after the sale of a home or the purchase of a home to families with school-aged children. We found out how that worked. Plus, we've been looking at oil this morning. After a weekend of heightened geopolitical tension, we've been looking at what it means for the black stuff with Christoph Ruhl, who is a senior research scholar at Columbia University.
Talking of those markets, Brandy, we've got the good man Ed Bell on board this week from Emirates MBD. He's going to be keeping an eye on all things markets.
Yeah, and that regional tension that Richard mentioned there is certainly something that people are watching across commodities and stocks. Let's start with stocks and look at what's happening in Asia this morning and how it's being taken on board. Ed Bell.
The escalation of geopolitical anxieties in the Middle East is leaving financial markets on edge as investors are gauging whether conflict can be contained or if there is going to be a substantial global economic impact. Investor sentiment has already been shaken by persistent hotter-than-expected inflation prints in the U.S., and that's been pushing back expectations of when the Federal Reserve is going to start easing policy and also by how much. The risk of a major conflict is likely going to keep haven assets like gold or U.S. treasuries or the U.S. dollar in favor as investors seek safety.
Yeah, and as Rich mentioned, their oil markets very much shrugging things off in terms of risk oil. Little change this morning, 90.17. Ed again.
Oil markets are also going to be watching the events of the last 48 hours very closely for any threat to physical supply, either in production or to shipping routes. So far, oil prices have improved in 2024 on the back of supply restraint and decent, if not necessarily robust, economic performance in major economies like the U.S. The risk of a conflict involving a major producer will only harden up the floor under oil prices and make any easing in energy price inflation harder to come by.
I love an energy metaphor, hardening up the floor. At the same time, we've actually had a downwards revision from the IEA when it comes to oil demand growth for this year. They have lowered their demand for 2024 and for 2025 as well.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, obviously, Market Watch at the moment, the one market that seems to be bearing the brunt at present is Bitcoin. The world's largest cryptocurrency by market capitalization. Yeah, not a commodity, is it? Is it finance? But it is an indicator nonetheless. And that has seen the most significant drops in value, specifically on Saturday, but since then as well, fell the most in more than a year late on Saturday, dropping by 7.7% Saturday, biggest decline since March last year, as the wider cryptocurrency market also fell. I don't know what that tells us about cryptocurrencies and world and geopolitical tensions the world over. But interesting move there. We'll keep an eye on not just Bitcoin.
Not what you would
others.
Expect from something people are calling a safe haven, though.
This Bitcoin is the new gold. Didn't behave like gold. Gold loves a crisis. Gold price hasn't moved an awful lot in response to the events over the weekend. But as you say, Bitcoin moving in the opposite direction, behaving very much as a risk asset rather than a safe haven asset over the past 24, 48 hours.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
The aforementioned energy expert is Christoph Ruhl. He's a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. He's also former head of research at the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority and former chief economist of BP. He knows the industry well and he joins us now live on the line this morning from London. Christoph, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning to you.
Let's start with oil market reaction to the events over the weekend, Iran's attack on Israel. Leaving aside the politics of it, how would you characterize oil traders' reaction this morning?
Well, it's a very interesting reaction how the market judges what happens, and it's very hard to leave aside the politics of it, because there are two principal ways to read events of the last weekend. I think one is starting, you could say, that Iran demonstrated that it finds it very difficult to technologically capable of launching a direct attack. But one way of looking at behind this, what might have been behind the scenes, is that this was a rather strange song and dance with the attack pre-announced, advertised, with everybody in public trying to play down the consequences and so on. So that one way to look at this would be that now the ceremonial part has been done, and if Israel doesn't overreact or doesn't react at all and shows that it has this restraint, the danger has been deflated. Another way to look at what has happened is that based on the difficulty, Iran has to do something more effective. Could be that if Iran really wants to damage the Western alliance, Israel and those backing it, it would have to do something closer to home, something related to the oil region which surrounds it. And that would be a much more, shall we say, bullish or devastating, actually, sense for markets, and they would react much more with upward pressure, and they didn't. So they clearly thought that the air is out of this for a while.
We've only got a few minutes with you, so let's look at the fundamentals of the oil market at the moment. Conflicting reports about oil demand over the weekend. We've got a fairly bullish forecast from OPEC about oil demand, and yet the International Energy Agency, Brandy mentioned this just a couple of minutes ago, are cutting its 2024 world oil demand growth expectations. How do you read demand?
More on the side of the IEA without wanting to support the IEA too much, because they are notorious for adjusting their forecasts frequently. I think the OPEC forecast, that's where your politics come back, is overly bullish.
The IEA is, you think the OPEC is overly bullish?
So I think that the actual demand numbers will come in much lower than the 2 million plus, which OPEC suggests, and more in the range of the 1.2 million barrels per day, which the IEA suggests, after several adjustments. So in other words, the post-COVID bounce is over and the economy turns to a much more normal stage, and so does oil demand.
So oil is around $90 a barrel at the moment for Brent crude. That's where it finished last week as well. I don't have many concerns that the world won't have enough oil, but there are those who have raised the spectre, potentially towards the end of this year, that there could be a shortage of oil as the US economy is in good shape, as the Indian economy is in good shape. China is not in great shape, but it is still growing. You don't share those fears?
No, there has not been, there is not, and there will not in the foreseeable future be a shortage of oil. I mean, we still have spare capacity, which is left spare because OPEC Plus production by more than 2 million barrels per day. We have the strongest production in the US for this year probably that we ever had, and it keeps on growing. And but don't forget, we have an oil price which is, if you adjust it for inflation and efficiency gains, lower than the average over the last 10 years. So this is not an exorbitant high oil price. It is just in nominal terms, looks like it. But no, there is enough oil in the world. So the problems come from politics and from geopolitics.
Christoph, can we talk about a story from late last week during the Eid al-Fitr break that broke? Reuters news agency reporting that ADNOC, Abu Dhabi National Oil Company, had actively considered a bid for BP, one of the world's energy majors. And I mentioned in the introduction, not only are you former chief economist at BP, but formerly head of research at the Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. And of course, you're not speaking on behalf of either of those organizations. I'm well aware now, but you certainly do have some context. What was your reaction to this?
I think it was a lot of things are obviously being discussed in boardrooms in a lot of companies, but I think this was an unlikely event. What we are seeing is a wave of mergers and acquisitions, as we always do if an industry consolidates. Most of these acquisitions and so on took place in the US and come in the wake of the shale revolution, which was like a very individualized revolution, so to speak, carried forward by many smaller companies, which then sort of started to consolidate, focus less on growth, more on shareholder returns, and more on size. I don't think we are yet at a stage where we can speak of mergers between super majors, so the seven big oil companies, or between very large state-owned companies and very large private companies. For that to happen, we would need a situation like in the 1990s, perhaps with a many years of high oil prices and these institutions to be even more awash in cash than they are currently.
More broadly, though, ADNOC potentially on the acquisition trail. The Reuters story says that ADNOC has been looking at several potentially transformative acquisitions in this space, and it says it is big enough to do so. It's not a listed company, but if Saudi Aramco is a $2 trillion company, ADNOC's about the third the size, so that would make it maybe a $700 billion company. BP is just a $100 billion company. Would you see the likelihood that you would get ADNOC making some kind of transformative acquisition in this space? Would that make sense to you?
Let's say the ambition might be there, because ADNOC has been a trailblazer in many ways in reorganizing its downstream activities and allowing investors in. But it also always has been a company which has been under control of the government of the Emirates, ultimately. And it is hard to see that would be really transformative, how a state-owned company could acquire, with the consent of the shareholders, a private company of the size of BP. It is not impossible to imagine. It certainly would be transformative. But as I said, I think we are still some way off from a major, major acquisition like that.
Finally, Christoph, a quick word on green energy and the energy transition, the World Future Energy Summit kicking off in Abu Dhabi in about 24 hours' time. For you, what's the big story this week when it comes to green energy and energy transition? There are many, I know, but what would be the big one for you?
The biggest one is that we are starting to realize that the transition will not be as simple as we always thought, you know, a simple process of substitution, out with the dirty fossils, in with the clean fuels. It's going to be a longer lasting, much more complex story of complementarities, of substitution within the fossil sector, such as gas for coal, between the fossil sector and the renewable sector, such as that even the dirty coal-fired power plant can increase the share of wind because it provides backup generation. Or of substitution within the renewable space when we talk about hydrogen and use CCS to put the gas back, the greenhouse gases back into the earth. It is therefore, I think, a great credit for the UAE when they did in COP at the end, the insistence that it will not be possible without fossil fuels. And what we saw this weekend is, I would go one step further, is that you cannot have an energy transition without energy security. And at the moment, you cannot have energy security without fossil fuels.
Christoph, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much indeed for getting up early in London to speak to us. Really do appreciate it. Christoph Ruhl there of Columbia University. He mentioned hydrogen there. And Tom, you picked up on the fact that a new speaker announced for the World Future Energy Summit. Who's coming to town to talk hydrogen?
Bojo. Boris Johnson will be in town. He's part of an all-star panel, that will be turning up for the World Energy Summit, Green Energy Summit down in Abu Dhabi, which gets underway in earnest tomorrow, but runs pretty much throughout the course of this week. Keep it locked here on Dubai 103.8 FM for updates live from the event from the news team and others.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-sized Business Breakfast.
And with a lot of kids heading back to the classroom this morning, we are speaking to the new real estate brokerage that is giving cash back for school fees to families. Scott McFarlane is managing partner of Family Homes DXB. Scott, good morning. It's nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me what you're doing.
So Family Homes DXB is uniting real estate brokerage and education advisory under one roof. For a while, I've found it surprising here in Dubai that the two sectors are treated very separately and independently, when for families, they very much go hand in hand, or certainly should. Dubai has more international schools per square foot than any other city on the planet. So the number one determining factor for where a family decides to rent or buy their home is typically where their child or children goes to school or aspires to go to school. So like I say, I think it surprised me for a little while that there's nowhere that a parent can go to have a deep and meaningful conversation about both at the same time. So that's one of the things we're trying to change.
Okay. And how does that turn into cash back for families? What's the actual model?
The model is that if a family buys or sells their house with Family Homes and the value of that house is 2.5 million or above, 30 days post completion, we give a cashback fee towards that family. We say it's cashback towards school fees because parents need to be able to prove to us that they have a child at a school in Dubai in order to qualify for that give back scheme. And the amount that parents get back is pegged to the purchase price of the house. So the higher the purchase price of the house, the more cash they get back.
What kind of cash are we talking?
The entry point is 15,000 dirhams for any houses that are bought or sold between 2.5 and 6.5 million. That jumps up to 20,000 for houses between 6.5 and 12.5. and it goes up to 30 for houses between 12.5 and 20.
Why are you calling it cashback for school fees rather than just we charge a lower fee than other people?
Because I think fiddling with the status quo can often be frowned upon. From a cash flow perspective for us, it's better to get the fees in as normal as all other brokerages do, and then retrospectively give that cash back to parents. How often have you heard parents or families generally say, we'd love to get off the rental cycle and into homeownership. The deposit's going to be a challenge. If we get it, the next few months are going to be pretty difficult. So we're hoping that we can smoothen that process and make a little bit easier for them financially.
Okay, and that money comes out not of the broker's fees, as I understand it, because you have a split, don't you, in the fees that are in between the brokers and the brokerages, but yours.
Exactly. So the 2% from the buyer or seller or both comes into the firm. The brokers get their commission split, which we think is really attractive in our place. And then the cashback percentage comes out of our cut. We just think there's enough to go around. The purchase price is going up quite considerably over the last few years, especially in the family communities, the villa communities mainly. So whenever you bring all that into consideration, I think there's enough to run a healthy business with fair pay for the brokers, happy staff in back office, giving parents their slice back, and then and having enough to go around.
What does it mean for your fee though? Because if you're at the higher end there, what does it do to the percentage that you take in as a company?
The higher end, what do you mean by the higher end?
Oh, in terms of the cash that you are giving back.
So the amount that we're giving back to parents as a percentage of the purchase price is a lot higher at the lower end of the scale than it is at the higher end of the scale, because we believe the people that need the cash the most are the ones that are buying houses at the lower end of the scale, the 2.5 to 6.5 million. So 15,000 dirhams to those people is worth what we think a lot more than 30,000 dirhams to somebody that's buying a house for 25 million dirhams, for example. But clearly, as a firm, we're not making an awful lot of money on the lower end prices. So houses 2.5, 3.5, that kind of thing. But as you'll know, there are a lot of houses that are worth a lot more than that in this city. So we think that we can make it up back with those types of transactions.
Are you worried about putting off buyers that don't fit into the family category? People who don't have kids, people whose kids aren't yet school age, that they might think, well, hang on, other people are getting money back, but I'm not.
Potentially, I don't think it's a big risk, because what they will get, even if they don't have children, they'll get a best-in-class brokerage service from people that have been in the game for a long time. A lot of our brokers have been here for a while, high performers in a lot of the villa communities. We also have quite a few teachers that have retrained as real estate brokers. There's actually a lot of science that suggests that teachers make for great real estate brokers, especially here in Dubai, where they have a wonderful knowledge of the city, especially PE teachers that are travelling around the city.
Tell me more about that very quickly.
The PE teachers, they are often on buses at other schools and other communities, so they build up a really good, solid knowledge of the city, which is obviously important when you're trying to sell houses in the city. And we're finding that quite a few are looking to retrain, and often in real estate brokerage. So we've been very lucky to get 3 or 4 really, really good ones in.
What does it say about education as a career here if our teachers are looking to retrain as real estate brokers?
No, I don't think there's any risk of teachers leaving en masse. I think this city gives teachers a fairer package than probably anywhere else that I know anyway. But there's always 2 or 3 that are looking for something else that have been doing it for a while. And obviously, it's no secret here that the real estate market is booming and awash with opportunities. So,
Because your background is education. Your the other work that you've done, the other company that you've set up, is in the education space. This is not a new arena for you.
Yes, no, I've been in education supply chain here in Dubai for 10 years. And because I've been here for a while, I've moved around the city a lot as a consumer, rented, bought, sold. So I've got a really solid understanding of how the real estate market works, and it's always been a passion. But education supply chain is my background, and that's kind of where the idea was born. I'm in schools every day. I hear the challenges that families are facing. You know, as I said earlier, price per square foot to buy and also to rent in the family communities has gone up anywhere between 35% and 100% over the last 3 or 4 years. Wages over that same period, on the other hand, have gone up 11 or 12%. So families are really feeling the pinch. It's not sunshine and rainbows for an awful lot of people in the city at the moment.
We've got more than 18,000 real estate brokers in Dubai at the moment. Why did we need another brokerage full stop?
I just think there's an opportunity to come at things from a little bit of a different angle. Number one, having people in-house that can advise on two sectors which I feel go very much hand in hand or complement one another in this city. And number two, I just feel like our North Star metric is getting as many families as possible off the rental cycle and into homeownership. Because I think if families are planning to be here for 3+ years, with the rental prices as they are now and the way they are continuing to rise, likely in my opinion, it's very difficult for families to save. And that's a big reason why families come here in the first place, is to actually have something to go home with at the end of the time. And if you're continuing to pay out 55-60% of your household income on rent and school fees, it's very difficult to get your family balance sheet inflated to a level that you've got something to go home with at the end of the day.
I've got 20 seconds left with you. First couple of months, are people buying it?
Yes, we've been a kind of soft launch since the start of the year. We've been focused on onboarding great brokers, which we've had a great success with so far. Brokers are seeing the potential and the reasoning behind the model. And we're really excited to make some progress over the next few weeks and months.
We look forward to hearing how it goes. Scott McFarlane, Managing Partner of Family Homes DXB, the new real estate brokerage that is giving cash back for school fees. Thank you for your time.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And post that e-break, what better way to kick things off than with some great data for the property market at the moment. Who better to turn to than House & House Real Estate? They've just published the industry-leading Dubai market report for Q1, which reveals some interesting data as well. To help us work through that data, we've been joined by the MD, the Managing Director of House & House Real Estate. It is Simon Baker. Simon, good to see you. Thanks very much indeed for joining us early on a Monday.
Very good morning. Thank you for having me.
So Q1, the suggestion was that Q1 of this year was good. Has that been backed up by the numbers you've got?
Yeah, it certainly has. I think in terms of from a volume perspective, certainly obviously prices have appreciated a bit. But the volume being very, very strong, I think around 12% was the official number ahead of the first quarter of 2023. So, which is really exciting. So it's not just growth, but it's actual real volume coming to the market. Obviously, it's backed up by population, and you know we could dig into all the reasons.
So this, when you do the sort of year on year comparison as well, 24 better than 23 Q1.
Yeah. So in terms of the numbers, there were 25% in terms of the sales volume, but obviously that includes the fact that some of those properties have appreciated in price. And I think the actual, in terms of transactional numbers, it was 12% more units sold, if you like. So, which is really, really positive growth, because it shows that volume is there rather than just about price going up. If it was just the price going up, you could argue, oh, are we in a bubble? And people start asking those kind of questions. When the volume's up as well, it really shows the strength of the market. It shows the, you know, the demand from both end users and investors coming into the market. So it's very positive all round, really.
One thing that's always fascinating is, you know, who's buying, why they're buying, are these first-time buyers, are there secondary sales, but equally, where people are buying. We know that there's always been hot spots, but is that changing at all? Is that evolving?
I think certainly, you know, as everyone's aware, I think after COVID, there's been, you know, huge demand for villas and townhouses, people suddenly really appreciating their time off and their space and maybe a garden if you've got children and these kind of things. So villas and townhouses really took off and led the charge. In terms of supply and demand, this is very interesting. When you look at the supply figures, I think I hear some hugely varying numbers on the supply of villas and townhouses. You know, of the current market, it's actually just under 15%, which means that there's 85% apartments. There's actually about 8.5% townhouses and about 6.5% detached villas. Mm. So I think it's really important that, you know, and it's really important for us to help our customers, whether you're a buyer, a seller, or a tenant, provide all that data, you know, all this data. We work very closely with your friends Cavendish Maxwell, who are, you know, Property Monitor, who provide that data, and we can then try and interpret it. So it's both parts of that, really.
Off plan also doing well at the moment?
Off plan has been doing it exceptionally well, yeah. So almost 60%. I think the exact number was 58% of the whole market is off-plan transactions, which is huge, really, isn't it? So
it is, especially when you've got the competition out there. It's interesting to see JVC, Jumeirah Village Circle, again up there in terms of most transactions in this latest report as well. Again, suggesting that people are happier to move a little bit further than maybe the traditional areas, if you like, but equally looking to set down a few routes.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, obviously in JVC as well, you're bringing in their investors because there's, you know, it's you're bringing into the market, you know, not reasonably priced properties. So we're selling studios starting at like 600,000 dirhams. One beds now tend to be around the million dirham mark. So it's a very, very popular area for people coming from Europe. We're getting more and more European investors coming into the market. And obviously the demographic of those has shifted, you know, significantly over the years. So maybe 10 or 15, 20 years ago when we were selling property, people would used to ask the question, oh, can I sell it next week or can I sell it next month? Now more and more people are buying, you know, which is great for real estate. It should be a long-term investment. People are buying with a view that, you know, on completion, they're not asking what they can sell it for. They're asking what they can rent it out for. So it's very much a more of a long-term investment based on rental yield, and obviously Dubai has always offered some very, very strong rental returns here. So that's the, you know, the really attractive part to investors, really.
To that end, when you mentioned, you know, the increase in demand for villas, especially if people want to move family or start a family here, you know, they want a little bit more space around them. And there is this fascination with price per square foot here, more than you'll find anywhere else in the world. It is a dinner party conversation.
Yeah.
So where is seeing the sort of significant increase in price per square foot?
I mean, in the most recent, you know, 6 to 12 months, the biggest increases have been in villa communities such as Jumeirah Islands. I think that led the way in terms of price appreciation. Now, a huge thing for Jumeirah Islands is what's happened is that the developer Nikhil has allowed people to get an NOC when they're doing the renovation, no objection certificate, to really change that property. So they're taking a property that was a 20-year-old villa. It maybe was, you know, a more traditional, you know, Mediterranean or Arabic style. You know, it's probably not particularly well built, and developers or individuals are taking those properties, they're completely renovating them, so they're almost knocking the whole villa down and changing the look of it. So they're taking it, you know, from a, you know, maybe an Islamic cluster, you know, Jumeirah Islands, and turning it into literally a sort of modern Malibu style, you know, house with, you know, your few cool cars parked out the front. And suddenly that property is going from, you know, 10 million dirhams to maybe 20 or 25 million. So they're the properties that have probably really led the way in terms of that. I think it was 36% price appreciation in the last 12 months. So
I've
big
got
number.
30 seconds, and I've just got a question coming in from Abdusalam. Can you please quickly ask, who's buying off plan? Is it investors, is it flippers, or is it end users as at the moment?
Predominantly, I mean, we deal with a lot of European investors that are investing, and a lot of them are doing anything between 1 and 2 million dirhams is your average ticket size, so, you know, fairly sensible amount. Buying in the areas such as JVC, that hence why the last 12 months, you know, they've had the highest volume of transactions in terms of, you know, numbers of transactions, if not, you know, sale value, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. All the information can be found in House & House's Q1 Dubai Markets Report 2024. Make sure you do check it out. And a big thanks to the MD, Simon Baker, for joining us live in studio. So thanks so much indeed for your time.
Thanks very much for having me.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.